When we share someone's story here on the Diaries, the episode might end, but their story doesn't. So many of the people we've talked to, they've gone on to do incredible things. They have epic adventures and make significant impacts in our community. Over on Diaries Plus, we're catching up with some of our former guests to see what they've been up to. I recently sat down with Connor Ryan, a Lakota professional skier from our Sacred Slopes episode, who's been knocking out groundbreaking projects ever since the episode aired. It's really incredible. We had a great discussion about the impacts he's made, what keeps his fire burning, and taking ski lessons as a pro skier. Here's a snippet of the conversation.
All the source of joy that I use to fill my cup to be out in the world doing positive things comes from my relationship to the outdoors. And so I've really focused on like, wow, like there's so much power if I can give one person the relationship to the outdoors that I have through skiing. And maybe that will have as profound of an effect on them as it's had on me.
To listen to the full episode, use the link in the show notes to subscribe to Diaries Plus today. Yeah, you get more shows, but you also have a peace of mind of powering what's out there right now, keeping us moving forward, keeping this community together. So thank you for everyone who supported and everyone who's going to support. We appreciate it.
When I first learned that I had two growing inside me, I was shocked, then overwhelmed with panic. But as the news sunk in, my fears melted away. This is perfect, I thought. One pregnancy, two babies. Double the fun, double the intensity. My husband, Jason, and I, we thrive on those. The two of us have built athletic careers as professional adventure racers. We trek, bike, and paddle through the wilderness for days, transitioning from one ultra-length segment to the next. The race runs nonstop, with sleep on the clock. We average less than 2 hours of sleep in each 24-hour period, and events take 200 hours or more to finish. The longer the race, the more difficult the terrain, and the less sleep teams get, the better we place. For our day job, we travel the world to teach partner acrobatics and slacklining. Think Cirque du Soleil, just without the costumes. Jason balances me on his hands and feet as I move through complicated inversions and improbable transitions. We walk slackline suspended over canyons too, testing our mental and physical balance with each step. Certainly, a family was a balancing act we could manage. In the early stages of my pregnancy, I was intrigued and ready for the changes that would take place physically, emotionally, and mentally. As I watched my body change, I was excited and frightened. What would I let go of first? How long would it take for me to come back? I had no idea how motherhood would change the way I saw the world. As an athlete, I expected body image and performance challenges. I expected exhaustion. I expected attachment issues to my newborn twins. I never expected what was actually to come. I enjoyed a nearly perfect pregnancy. I took the boys on all sorts of trips. Down rivers at 5 months pregnant, an acrobatic teaching tour through Europe at 8 months, and on countless hikes, bike rides, and cross-country ski trips. I talked to them all the time. I told them how much we loved them and about all the adventures we had planned. I loved how they danced and kicked inside me. It felt beautiful and surreal. Baby B wiggled less than A. We called him the chill one, and A the wild one. At 37 weeks, I felt great. I skied and walked every day. At 38 weeks, I still felt good, but my doctor wanted me to get induced. I really wanted them to come naturally, so we waited. At 39 weeks, I went in to get a full assessment, and in the middle of the test, B flipped head down with his brother. I took that as a sign. So when the doctor asked once more for me to get induced, I said yes. However, on Friday the 13th, when I went in, the nurses told me that all of the rooms were taken. I could go home and wait if I wanted. So we listened to the boys' heartbeats, ate some lunch, and left the hospital. I had to sign a release form, but neither the doctor nor the nurse seemed too concerned that I wanted to go home and wait a few more days. On January 16th, we went in for a routine assessment test 2 days before the newly scheduled birthday. had a feeling that the doctors might want to keep me there, so I brought my hospital bag, just in case. The nurse hooked me up to the machines, but she couldn't find B's heartbeat. "Oh, he's usually just tucked in behind his brother," I told her. She brought in a radiologist. Jason got up and held my hand. They called in the doctor. "I am so sorry," was all I heard her say. I started to scream, then I started to hit myself. It all felt like a horrible dream, and I wanted so badly to wake up. "It's all my fault, it's all my fault, it's all my fault," played on repeat in my head like a broken record. I felt like a murderer. I felt like B hated me, that my family would forever blame me for the death of my son. I wanted nothing more but to go back and make a different choice on January 13th. Jason took my face in between his hands and brought his eyes close to mine. "He's meant for greater things, Chelsea. We have to stay strong for A. He's still with us." "Okay," I said. I took a deep breath. "I will try." A tiny piece of me thought that maybe the doctors had made a terrible mistake and that B had just been playing with all of us. "He's just sleeping," I reasoned. But he was not. 40 hours later, I felt like an empty shell. But the boys hadn't budged. The doctor told me I needed an emergency C-section, and 30 minutes later, A came out bucking his head, full of movement and life-affirming cries. He put his tiny hand on my face, his body so vibrant, so pink. They gave me B. He was beautiful, peaceful, and purple. My husband touched and kissed him and whispered, "Hi, Spirit Boy. We've been waiting to meet you." We got to hold both our boys together for 24 hours. A took on names meant for both of the boys and became Magnus Maxwell. His little brother became Spirit B. On the day that we came home, we had a ceremony for Spirit B with our closest friends and family. We put some of B's ashes in little vials and asked for them to spread him in the most beautiful places. Someday, as a family, we will visit him in all of those places around the world. The days and weeks that followed were filled with the deepest sorrow and the most intense happiness I have ever felt. Magnus would fall asleep on my chest or look at me with his big, deep wells of eyes, and a calm peace would come over me. But I could not get that last day I heard Spirit's heartbeat out of my head. Why didn't I get induced that day? I'm a terrible mother. Why us? I ruined our family. Negative thoughts circulated through my head like bags on a luggage belt that nobody came to pick up. I held Magnus close to me, struggled with depression, figured out how to breastfeed, slept, and drank every drop of water in sight. The rest of the time, I walked, I cross-country skied, and I cried. Every morning and evening, I went on cry walks. No matter the weather, I put Magnus in my shirt, put on my husband's oversized jacket, and went outside. Moving with the pain felt like my only option. To sit with it felt unbearable. I looked for Spirit B everywhere on those walks. One day, as I meandered down a path with my dad, I looked back and saw a beautiful red-tailed hawk on a low-hanging branch. I walked over to him. "Hello, Spirit Bee," I said aloud. The hawk sat still and held me in his focused gaze for what felt like forever. Finally, he blinked slowly, turned, and flew off. From then on, I started to see Spirit in the ravens, the hawks, and the butterflies. He peeked at me from reflections on the water, caught my attention in rainbows, and whispered to me in the wind. After I got home from the hospital, I would get up at first light, bundle up, and meditate on my deck. After a couple of weeks of this morning routine with the sun on my face, I started to feel the presence of someone else. One day, I heard a voice from both deep inside me and beside me say, "It's not your fault, Mama." And for the first time since Spirit B passed, I felt a brief wave of true calm come over me. After the wave had passed, I felt like a tiny piece of my grief and guilt had washed away with it. At first, I thought that insanity had overtaken me. Great, I thought. Now I'm hearing voices. Nervously, I told my husband about my experience. "So what?" he said. "If you believe it and it makes you feel better, then that's your path." His words slapped me awake and sunk into all the right places. My fog of depression, self-blame, and fearfulness had to go. I had to believe, not only for myself, but for my family. And so we began our slow journey of healing. We started to share our stories, thoughts, and ideas about the boys with one another. After a hike or ski with Magnus, I would come home and tell Jason where and how we saw Spirit that day. Before we put Magnus to bed every night, we took him outside underneath the stars to bid his brother sweet dreams. "Say hello to Spirit today," I said as Jason left for a 300-mile kayak race. He returned full of sleep-deprived hallucinations of a giggling, wild-eyed Spirit Boy clinging to the front of his boat as he paddled through the stormy night. Spirit B became part of our everyday talk. He weaved himself beautifully and seamlessly into the fabric of our lives. Our family and friends took it on too. They sent us pictures of rainbows and hawks with messages that read, "Spirit came for a visit today." Over time, it felt good, right, and healing to talk about Spirit B in this way. 3 months postpartum, I did my first adventure race since I learned I was pregnant. When it came time to climb to the highest point of Smith Rocks on our bikes, I felt a pair of invisible hands on the small of my back. They stayed with me and gave me a gentle push up the loose, steep, never-ending hill. My legs felt weak and flat, but they had a power in them that I had never felt before. I felt a determination to get to the top of the peak no matter what. Once there, I dropped my bike, took out some of Spirit B's ashes, and blew him into the wind. At that moment, the sun came out and two hawks started to circle us. On the way back down, I felt a huge release go from my heart up to the creases in my mouth. I crossed the finish line wet with tears of both joy and sorrow. We'd finished first, but I did not even register this till days later. Jason handed me a very excited and a very hungry Magnus. In the months that followed, I returned to more active training. I competed in a few mountain bike races, including a 100-miler, as well as a few 12-hour and 36-hour adventure races, and a 10-day expedition race in New Zealand. I started climbing and paddling whitewater again. I taught numerous multi-day acrobatic intensives in Europe, New Zealand, and around the U.S. My motivation remains strong as ever, but it has shifted. Now at the start of a race, I am excited for my time with Spirit B. I know that I will see him and feel him more deeply than in my day-to-day life with his wildly curious brother. And after a few days in the wilderness, Spirit B comes to me and gently reminds me that his brother, Magnus, needs me to come home. It works somehow, and I emerge with a wrecked body full of energy and love. Jason used to teach high school physics, and recently one of his academic colleagues questioned our relationship with Spirit B. "Why do you keep pretending you can see Spirit B in the wildlife and weather? Rainbows are refraction and reflection. Wind is an atmospheric pressure differential. You know that." Jason responded simply, "Perception is everything. This, at least, is one thing we have learned." So why not choose to let Spirit color the sky and whisper on the breeze? To see him in every rainbow and hawk, to look for him on every mountaintop and in the reflection of every pool of water. This connection to him is our truth. It is the story we create because we believe that every one of us has the ability to write our own book in life. Why not make it a good one? I'm Chelsea Magnus, and this is my short.
The Diaries is made possible by the good people at Patagonia. In this time of unprecedented threats to the environment, it can be hard to know the best way to get involved. That's why Patagonia started ActionWorks, to help individuals figure out how to best take action in their area. It connects not-for-profits with individuals and events. It brings us together. To see events, petitions, volunteer opportunities, and donation possibilities near you, visit patagonia.com/actionworks. Additional support comes from Kuat Racks, a little company who believed they could build a better bike rack and did. Check out their lineup of sleek, easy-to-use, sturdy racks at kuatracks.com. Support also comes from Vossen Brewing, named one of the 50 best new breweries in the country by Beer Advocate magazine. It's a pretty big deal because I think there's like a new brewery opening up every 20 seconds right now. Since they've opened last year, Vossen has focused on unconventional ales for people who share an appreciation of the outdoors. If you find yourself in Richmond, Virginia, pay a visit to their tap room or follow them on social media at Vossen Brewing. You, our listeners, you also, just like I said at the beginning of the show, you keep the diaries thriving. To pledge your support, go to dirtbagdiaries.com and click the button in the upper right-hand corner. Thank you so much to everyone who's donated already. And a huge thank you to Chelsea for sharing her story. Chelsea continues to write about her journey with Max and Spirit on her blog, endurancemama.com. She still teaches acrobatics around the country, usually with Max in tow, and just led a retreat for other moms. Music today from Publish the Quest, Little Glass Men, Chris Zabriskie, Denise Casey, and John Barry. The tracks are courtesy of Free Music Archive or with direct permission from the artists. Jacob Bain and Nise Koto composed our theme song. You can find links to the artists at our website. The episode was produced by Jen Altschul and Becca Call and mixed and edited by Cordelia Zars. I'm Fitz Cahal, and you've been listening to The Dirtbag Diaries. Thanks for tuning in.